This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. Now this is episode 20 of Coastal Stories. Thanks so much to everyone who's listened to the podcast so far, and thanks to everyone who's subscribed, reviewed and rated as well. This is the last episode of Series 1, so there'll be a short break after this one. We'll be back later in the summer for Series 2, with the salt scrubbed from our superstructure and the barnacles scraped from our bottom. Now this episode is slightly different in that I'm going to tell a story from my new book. It's called The Channel, and it's published by Orion, and it'll be out at the end of June. And it's full of tales from the English Channel. This story is about the victim of a shipwreck in 1873 who's buried in a churchyard at Capel Le Fern near Folkestone in Kent. Something really touched me about this story when I researched and wrote it, so on the sunny morning of the 22nd of January this year, 2020, the anniversary of the wreck, I went back and left flowers on a lonely grave. So this coastal story is from the book, with a recording of me returning to Capel Le Fern 147 years to the day after one of the countless tragedies that lay hidden in the seas around our shores. So this is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. You don't arrive at St Mary's Church at the end of a long lane on the chalk bridge between Dover and Folkestone by accident, not unless you're startlingly lost. It's a long way from anywhere, so nobody comes here without a reason. I was here because I was looking for someone. I just found her too, beneath one of the less assuming of the churchyard's memorials, close to the lych gate. Ellen Tuff's simple headstone had once been topped by a sturdy stone cross, but somehow that had been sheared off and was now propped behind it. The inscription was weather-faded and hard to decipher among the lichen blooms, but after a good deal of squinting, I realised I found what I'd come to see. Ellen Tuff, it said, passenger in the North Fleet, drowned 22nd of January, 1873. Ellen's grave is separate from all the others, and its headstone is at a different angle, compounding the sense of loneliness that characterises her presence here, in a place to which she had no connection. She left little impression on the world during her life. Even on her own gravestone, her name is dwarfed by that of a ship. But I felt compelled to find her, as she seemed to represent something more than the sum of her life. The North Fleet was a three-masted cargo and passenger vessel of 1,000 tons, built in 1853 and already a veteran of the England-Australia run. On the 13th of January 1873, she set sail from Gravesend with a hold full of iron rails and 379 people on board, destined for Hobart, Tasmania. The iron was for a new railway, and nearly all the passengers were labourers emigrating to build it, many of them travelling with their families. From the start, the voyage was hit by bad weather, and the North Fleet spent much of the first week riding out storms. On the 22nd of January, in the face of screaming gales, she anchored about 3 miles off Dungeness, set her mast lights, and hunkered down for the night. Late in the evening, when most passengers were in their bunks, the watch on the deck saw a large ship looming out of the darkness, heading straight for them. Despite their attempts to raise the alarm, the ship, a Spanish schooner called the Morillo, rammed the North Fleet amidships with a splintering of timber and a screeching of wrenched metal. Astonishingly, the Morillo, instead of checking the damage and insisting in any evacuation, extricated itself from the stricken North Fleet and steamed off into the night, continuing on its way to Lisbon. The master would later claim that the damage had seemed superficial to him. The North Fleet sank in half an hour. While 86 people were saved via the two ships' lifeboats and two nearby vessels alerted by the distress signals, the remaining 293 perished, of whom the channel's tides and currents would give up just six. On the 29th of January, a week after the disaster, a woman's body was found on a beach close to Cape La Fern, some 30 miles from where the North Fleet went down. She was taken to the nearby Royal Oak pub, washed and dressed in a white chemise, placed in a parish coffin, photographed and buried unidentified at St. Mary's the following day, her only mourner a representative of the vessel's owners. Although no longer used for services today, St. Mary's is maintained by the Church's Conservation Trust and open to visitors determined enough to find it. Inside there's that atmosphere unique to old country churches, where centuries of quiet contemplation leave a meditative stillness tangible even to the non-religious. It's a simple church with dark wooden pews and whitewashed walls discoloured in patches by damp. The wartime roll of honour is handwritten, hangs in a frame and runs to just four names. The chancel is separated from the nave by a beautiful carved three-bay stone arcade dating from the 14th century, and the beamed roof is supported by timber almost a millennium old. Ellen's coffin would have rested in the aisle during her brief funeral service. The vicar's voice would have echoed around the church, empty, save for the company man standing awkwardly in a pew with his hat in his hand, there for what he represented rather than who he was, keen for all this to be over as soon as possible. Meanwhile, from around the country, photographs and descriptions of people feared lost in the disaster were arriving in Dover. It was noted that the dead woman from St. Mary's bore a strong resemblance to the mother in a family group, with a father and a young daughter. The clothes in which the woman had been found and the photograph taken at the Royal Oak were dispatched to the sender, who confirmed that they belonged to 38-year-old Ellen Tough from London. A headstone was placed on her grave, the cost of which was met by the Mansion House Relief Fund, set up in the wake of the tragedy. Standing in front of the same stone, I ran through all I'd managed to find out about Ellen Tough. It didn't amount to much. She was born Ellen McCarty in Bantry, County Cork in 1834, and spent her childhood on the shores of Bantry Bay, looking out to the Atlantic beyond. At some point, probably around the time of the famine in Ireland during the mid-1840s, she emigrated to London with her parents, John and Mary, and at the turn of the 1860s, was working as a cook in a Notting Hill boarding house. In January 1862, at the age of 28, she married Edwin Tough, a builder's labourer 7 years her junior, and 2 years after that, their daughter Ellen, who would be known as Jane, was born. It wasn't easy being poor in Victorian Britain, and Edwin Tough was among those trying to do something about it. By 1872 he was president of the 2,500 strong Builders Labourers Union, and in September that year was petitioning the Master Builders Association for a sixpenny pay rise for his members, as provisions, clothing and house rent have risen to such an extent that our income cannot meet our expenditure. The well-supported strike that went with the petition clearly didn't trigger much of an improvement, because 4 months later, the Tufts were boarding a ship bound for a new life in Tasmania. For Ellen, it was her second emigration, on the move again, attempting to escape the grinding poverty that had defined her life. Instead, the English Channel left her here, in a place she never knew, and where at first nobody even knew her name. Members of her family, who would have been resigned to never seeing her again after she'd emigrated, visited her grave 3 weeks after her death. But since then, there's every chance I was her first visitor in nearly 150 years.
Here she is.
I left flowers. It didn't seem nearly enough.
A few carnations down.
The soul of the English Channel is a mother to the countless souls like Ellen's, washed back and forth by an eternal tide. That was A Coastal Story. I'm Charlie Connolly. You can pre-order the book from your local bookshop or from online retailers. It's called The Channel, it's published by Orion, and the jacket's quite snazzy. I am perfectly happy for you to judge this book by its cover. Thanks again for listening to Series 1 of Coastal Stories. See you later in the summer, when you've bought the book. I'll be asking questions.